again, you mean?
It's like we've already just been talking about the tour, so we'll probably end up talking about the tour a little bit more because Jesus Christ, it's, I thought this year was going to be boring. I thought that Pogacar was going to just do Pogacar and walk away with it. And to be honest, we're what, six stages in and he's got the yellow jersey. It's possible that he is going to walk away with it still. Like, there's no denying that. But for six stages of racing, my God, it's been six insane stages.
it's been mental. Like, a couple of days ago, I was talking to mates about the cobbles. And I was like, I was on the side of like, these cobbles shouldn't be in at all. Like, then poor GC guys who've trained for, you know, year flat out to win the GC, it could all end in the cobble stage. And then you see the cobble stage and you're like, shit, we need more there. Like,
yeah, it's just amazing to watch.
I want to watch that again. Like, it's interesting and it's, I don't know, the tour's boring. I'm happy to say it as a cyclist. Tour is quite boring for the first couple of weeks anyway, first couple of days, sorry, but this is definite, like, it's definitely changed them first couple of flat days that are normally boring, and it's like, shit, I want to watch this, like, it's good to watch.
You think, I mean, the time trial was interesting to start with because no one expected Yves Lampaert to win it, like, and it was one of those things where the top, there was people you expected to be in the top 10. Like Ganna, Pogacar, Primoz, you know, Jonas Vingegaard, Wout van Aert. You expect them to be in the top 10. What you didn't expect was the conditions to end up playing so much of a part into it. So, you know, we had Ganna, Pogacar and Wout basically 1-2-3.
Yeah.
And the weather was biblical when they were going. And then you know, Stefan Bissinger having a really pretty bad crash, who was one of the favourites for the TT, but riding on some nuts like prototype stuff, like, was it like a 62 chainring or something crazy? And then apparently no bearings in his disc wheel, things like that. Like, they've just been trying to make it
fast as possible.
And then, you know, you look at the next day, which I think was Fabio Jakobsen, I think, run the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
That was beautiful to see because it was a... You know, I am a massive Cav fan, so I'm partly disappointed he's not there.
100%.
Beautiful to see him go and win after the, you know, his horrific crash a few years
ago. Takes some balls, like, takes some balls to mentally to get over there and then just, like, it's impressive.
Yeah.
Like, really, really impressive. And you got G. Obviously, I'm Welsh, got to mention G in the time trial. Forgot to take a G layoff.
Oh, yeah.
Weirdly enough, a guy I know from Wales that was like lives like a few doors down from my mum and dad got hold of the Gilet yesterday because they're passing around France.
Which is a really cool thing.
Sent me a picture. He's like, I got the Gilet. I'm like, mate, that's class. Like,
I like so good. I really like that they're doing that and sharing it. And it's G's made a thing of it, which is quite cool. And he, you know, he's in the top 10. He's in the top 10 at the moment. He's doing good.
Yeah. Nice. It's just hard to see anyone bar Pogacar. Like, it's just
the thing is, imagine if Pog was in Ineos or Jumbo Visma. I mean, everyone says like he doesn't have the same team in terms of he does still have a very good team around him, let's not deny that, but it is not the caliber of Ineos, or it's not the caliber of Jumbo Visma. It just isn't. I don't care what anyone says. They're very, very strong, but they're not as good in terms of an all-round team. So I think that's where this tour could actually become quite interesting, because you've got Ineos, who have not won the Tour de France since Egan Bernal won it quite a few years ago now. What, 4 years ago, I think it might be?
Yeah, I think it was 3 or 4, yeah.
And then he was the last person to win it before Pog won it. And then you've got Jumbo Visma, who massively, massively want to win the tour with Primoz. And the irony is now, you know, Primoz, I'm a big fan of Primoz. I really like his interviews because he just seems really like quite, everyone's like, he's a bit robotic, but actually I think he seems quite a nice guy.
Yeah.
And quite like honest and innocent almost. And then you've got Vingegaard, who's like suddenly becoming
like this thing.
This thing. The problem with Vingegaard is he just doesn't have a sprint. He can't sprint.
Yeah.
So you've got an incredibly strong Jumbo-Visma team with Primoz, with Laporte, with Wout van Aert, with Tiesch Benoot, with Vingegaard, and then you've got an incredibly strong Ineos team with G, with Dylan van Baal, trying to think of who's in it, Pidcock, Luke
Martinez,
Martinez, like incredibly, Adam Yates, incredibly.
Yeah, it's crazy, yeah.
And so you've got these two powerhouses of teams, basically realistically against one guy.
Yeah. I think that spurs him on, though.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, 100%.
I think he's the sort of guy that's just like, yes, all right then. Like that first tour he won, he just surfed wheels, like he just raced his bike and won the tour.
I
think something bad, like something's got to happen for him to lose it because he's that strong.
He's not had, they were saying in the pre-race commentary last night, he's not had one of those bad luck moments in a GC battle, which other GC riders have had.
Yeah.
You think of Froome running up Vontu, and you think of, Dumoulin in the Giro when he stopped have a shit, or crashes or really bad day, whatever it is. He's not had that.
Yeah.
In the last, every year he's won the tour, he's not had something happen to him like that. So it's interesting. It's exciting. It's really exciting. I mean,
yeah, it's the most excited I've been for a tour in a while.
Yeah.
In the first few days anyway, obviously there's a lot to come, but normally the first few days are just, you just want to watch the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Or the highlights or something.
Yeah, but it's been a good watch so far, which is good.
The other bit that I thought was interesting that I saw yesterday is, Wout van Aert went in the breakaway from the go on the longest stage of the tour. The yellow jersey doing that does not... I can't ever remember that happening. And it was it was great to see. And imagine being a fan at the side of the road and just seeing Wout van Aert in the breakaway.
Hammering it. And do you see Pidcock's interview after as well? So honest. He's like, he's just taking the piss.
He's taking the piss. He's playing with our balls is what he says.
Yeah, but it's true. It's like it just gives them a bit of a face when someone is as honest as Pidcock was. It's like, he is literally taking the piss. He's so strong.
Yeah.
He's literally taking the piss. It's good to see. I think it
was intentional to do that because I think he would probably have lost the yellow jersey on today's stage up anyway. And I think it's kind of a, just go out there, have fun, see what happens, do what you want. He in the green jersey competition, I think he's on 170 points.
Yeah.
And to put that into perspective, Cav won the green jersey last year on 320, 330.
Yeah.
We're not even a week into it and he's halfway.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think with Wout and Pog, they just want to race their bikes.
Yeah.
And I think that people as talented as that, riders as talented as that, sometimes they just can't help themselves. They just want to go. And as fans, it's go.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch the old days of Sky when everyone's riding that mountain looking at power meters. It's just go and give us something to watch, which they've done. And it's interesting, it's been a good few days.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy. My fantasy team is doing well for me so far. Every rider has got points, so that's a success in the first week.
I think all of mine have. I'm sat somewhere mid-table in our local fantasy league.
Well, I've got Pogacar, Primoz, Pinot, Dylan Teuns, Christoph Laporte, Benjamin Thomas, Alex Kirsch, Taco van der Hoorn, and Wout van Aert.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, I don't know how I made it work, but bear in mind, Pog has got points. The lowest point rider is Pino, who's got 2 points. But I basically think with Pino, he's got nothing to lose. He could win a mountain stage quite easily.
Yeah, he's worth checking in there. I was just trying to get mine up, but the link's not working.
Alex Kirsch, I put in because he's young, Trek Segafredo rider. Same thing. He's going to go in breakaways.
Paco
van der Hoorn proved his worth on the cobbled stage.
Yeah, mate, there's there's people in our league, there was people spending way too much time picking their teams. There's people I might change it tomorrow night. A lot of thought goes into teams, reading stuff. People were looking at past results. It was going too far. But it's good. it's good. Like, it's nice to see people so enthusiastic about about the tour and like fancy teams and stuff. Like, yeah, that's what people, fans like us, want. Like,
yeah, I mean, my stance on it, I watch a lot of bike racing, so I think I probably have quite a good knowledge on how riders are doing. And so I've just gone down the route of going, well, I need to have three riders from Jumbo Visma because that team is so strong.
Yeah.
I've got to have Pog. And then I was like, Pino's a shout. Dylan Twins is a shout because he'll pick up points. Benjamin Thomas will go in breakaways. Alex Kirsch will be just a solid all-rounder for Trek. Taco van der Hoorn goes in breakaways and just drills himself. And that was kind of my stance on it. I basically made it work around making sure I could have Pog, Primoz, Laporte and Van der Van der Aert. And then Van der Poel very openly said before the tour started, he's like, I'm not in good form.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, well, that answers that one. I don't need him in the team if I know that...
he's not. And he hasn't been, is he? He hasn't been?
He's not been. He's been very, you know, just... He might ride into it. You never know. He might, the second time trial, he might do a good TT. He did a good TT for this TT. So
yeah,
you never know.
There's no Pog in my team. I let emotions get the better of me.
You went for G.
I can't not do it. Like, it's this being Welsh. There's just something ingrained in me that I could not. And I tried as well. I tried to click on Pog, but I couldn't. I don't even think he's going to win.
Yeah.
Like, but just, yeah. I hope he wins, but I can't.
Like I said, I'm similar if so. Alex Dowsett is a mate of mine.
Similar
if he's racing, I always put him in my team.
Yeah, my other half's favorite cyclist.
Dowsett.
Just loves Dowsett.
He's a really nice guy. There's no denying it.
Yeah. Every race I'm watching, whether it's Cobbles, Tour, is Dowsett in there? It's like, no, sadly, he's not, but. Yeah. Nice one for asking, but yeah, Kate absolutely loves him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I think he watches he's got a YouTube, hasn't he, with his wife?
They've got a YouTube together. They both also got they've got a YouTube together, which is kind of about him, and then they have a separate YouTube which is about parenthood as well.
She might watch that one. I'm not sure,
but I always put Cav in, and I always put Dowsett in if they're racing.
You've got to put Cav in. It's the rules. It's just the rules. If Cav's there, you've got to put him in.
You can't ever write him off, and it proved it last year. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. He's got both. To be fair, both of them are out of contract this season.
Yeah, last year annoyed me as a cyclist. I think, like, you know, that all these stupid sports personality awards and stuff.
Yeah,
like, they are stupid, but like, I don't think people understood how big of a deal it was. What he done last year. Like, and it's all football, isn't it? Which is fine. But I remember watching it thinking, like, Cav, like, he has, what he done is mad. It's crazy. Like, he's just come back from an illness, like, from nowhere and just starts, so good. It was the best part of the tour last year by a mile.
Yeah. And I would, if anyone hasn't, I would highly recommend, I listen to quite a lot of audiobooks, and I would highly recommend both of his books I'm looking for the names of them right now. So you've got the first one that came out, which was when he was quite a bit younger. It's kind of, he's quite like cocky in it, and it's actually really good because it kind of, you kind of understand it's him as he was younger, like a bit cocky, a bit of a Jack Ladd. But it's very honest. And that one's called At Speed. And that one came out.
This is Audible.
I don't need to know that. I can't remember when. I'm trying to see if it says where it came out. It doesn't say where it came out. But that one's a really good book as like a kind of explains what he's like as a person.
Yeah.
And he bought out a book at the start of this year about last year's Tour de France called Tour de Force. And that book, he very openly talks about the Epstein-Barr virus. And actually, I don't think people quite realize how serious that is as an illness. And then he very openly talks about depression and how much really struggles with depression. And especially in the lead up to the tour last year, how badly he was struggling with it. And, you know, to the fact that it was, you know, affecting the marriage and.
Yeah. I didn't know that book was out.
Yeah. The audio book version of it is him reading it. So
I'm an audio book man. as well, like an audiobook. I'm going to download that. I generally didn't know that that was out, which is weird.
It's a really good one. I'd highly recommend it.
Just listen to him on podcasts and in media now. That I just like him. I just think he is who he is, isn't he? He's just he might be a massive dick in real life, never met him, but he seems down to earth. And I don't know, when you meet him, he wears his heart on his sleeve, which as fans, that's like, you want to see that. Like, that's what I want to see. So,
yeah. And he, you know, what was so lovely at the tour last year was seeing how he'd embrace everyone on the team and like give him burst into tears. And like, he won stages at the tour last year that I don't think anyone expected him to win, in terms of they weren't just lead out sprints, there were solo sprints. The one which equaled the record was a solo sprint, and he looked fucked. He was fucked. And he was just like, oh, I've just sprinted against the next best riders of their generation and I've won. And I'm
exactly
that makes it for me. Like, he's talking about sprinting and beating Wout Van Aert. Like,
it's class. Like, yeah. He's just the person that everyone wants to see win.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of love for him, especially now. There wasn't.
Yeah. But hopefully that's not the end of us seeing him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it will be. Bear in mind that he's won that, you know, won the national champs again in a way that no one expected him to win it.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, he is out of contract, but I mean, it'd be a question if he stays at Quickstep. I don't know, but
yeah,
I'd imagine another team will snap him up
100%
for a season. And then similar with Dowsett, like his contract, he's out of contract at the end of this year. Will he continue? Will he stay at Israel? Will he retire? Will he go to like a lower level team?
Yeah.
I think he's got a lot to offer still for a team, a hell of a lot to offer. Like,
yeah,
he's turned himself more from he's still very much a time trialist, but he's also a fantastic lead out man now.
Yeah. Well, he's got all that power, hasn't he?
Yeah. And I think,
we were talking about it the other day, saying I hope. I think I watched the YouTube or something of him talking about next year.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, I really hope that something happens. Because I remember, was it last year or the year before? He was a bit touch and go as well, before Israel come back in.
Yeah, 2 year. It was 2 years ago, and then he was offered a 2 year contract from Israel because he was on a 1 year contract.
Yeah.
And then after Katusha, he was on a 1 year contract, and then they gave him a 2 year contract. And I'm pretty sure he got that contract because he won a stage at the Giro.
Yeah, he won. Yeah, it was the Giro, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that's why he got that contract. And that was a beautiful thing to see.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's had the last couple of years, he's been more, he was like Andre Greipel's lead out man, basically, with Rick Szabo and a couple of others it was Marco Haller, I think, was in that team as well, maybe at that point. But anyway, he was the lead out man for Greipel until Greipel retired. And now I don't think, they've got Nizzolo, I think, is their sprinter now, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Giacomini.
Yeah, I don't know much. I don't know much about that recently.
I watch too much racing, can't you?
Yeah. No, but when we were out last week riding, it's like your knowledge on the smallest of racing stuff is crazy. Like, it's mental.
That's because I think I'm a cycling fan and I really enjoy the racing. Like, I ride my bike, and I love riding my bike and I love doing all the kind of challenges and stuff I do, but I also fucking love watching the racing. I'm a fan of the sport, a genuine fan.
And I
watch I might not watch every single race, but if I'm on the turbo, I'll put a race on, I'll watch the highlights or something. And then if I'm working, I'll put a race on in the background. I'm always catching up on what's going on in the races. And then I watch all the cyclocross in the winter. I watch the mountain biking. And then I just find it all very interesting. I love the fact that there's so many variations of the same object.
Yes, it's mental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, bicycle. There's so many variations of it. And I think that leads me on quite nicely into who you are, actually.
Yeah.
Because
nice.
We were... So we met, Alex, last week.
Yeah.
It was a really random thing, actually. So I was down in I didn't know where it was. Somewhere south of where
South Down Velo, Winchester.
Winchester, that's the one. At South Downs Social doing a talk about ultra cycling, which is really cool. Really, really cool. Yeah. It's completely sold out. There was like 50, 60 people there. And Caroline, who recently cycled around the world with her husband, she invited me to come on this talk to sort of give a bit of a overview on ultra cycling stuff. And like, it's funny because like, I mean this to not sound arrogant and not big-headed or anything, but a lot of it, I perceive a lot of it is very second nature that because I've done it for so long, I haven't thought about it, but I was trying to really sort of think about what were the first things I did when I started doing like ultra stuff. And like, I fucking hate camping. I hate camping. I'm no interest in it. And for me, the first thing I did was I'd like camp to a mate's house and sleep in the garden. And that's how I started doing it. And like literally the only time in, you know, I will camp out is in a racing situation. I won't do it. Like if like I'm doing a social thing or a bunch of mates, I'm always just like, let's just get an Airbnb because it's
100%.
It's just nicer to have a shower and chill. And a comfortable bed. But yeah, so I'm always like, if I'm bike packing, my mindset's always going like, unless it's a race where you have to basically go until you need to sleep and then you carry on, I'm gonna stay in a hotel or an Airbnb or travel lodge or whatever it is. Anyway, so went and did that talk. And then the next day, my mate Andy basically texts me. Andy, who I've done a podcast with and has done loads of like the film stuff for me, he sort of texts me going, oh, I'm going to be your way because we were going to meet up anyway. Do you fancy coming for a ride with Alex? We're going to go into the New Forest and hit, I genuinely think some of the best gravel I've ridden in the UK. The New Forest is blessed with that. Incredible, really amazing gravel roads. And it's probably
Miles and miles and miles of just tightly packed, like American style gravel that you can actually go fast on. And what we done was just a small loop. Like there's just from here to Bournemouth, there's just miles and miles and miles of just gravel. Yeah, it's probably one of the best, if not the best place in the UK. The only thing is it's quite flat.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing, is it? There's pros and cons to that, but incredible off-road gravel, like fire track sort of trails. And we did like in total 30, 40K, something like that. And then went and visited, and then we got lunch at a very nice bike shop.
Yep.
With a very lovely bike shop, in fact, with lovely sandwiches and coffee. It was great. Yeah,
Woods Cyclery in Lindhurst, bit of a shout out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then rode back. And anyway, I pretty spontaneously said we should do a podcast because you work for Vitus Bikes.
Yeah.
And that's and that's kind of how it all came around. I've always been very aware of Vitus. And I think people maybe do not realize that the brand has been going since the 60s.
Yeah, maybe even longer. But in this, through the 60s and into the 70s and 80s, Vitus were the biggest manufacturer of aluminium bikes in the world.
Mm.
Vitus was a huge, huge, huge French brand, dominated cycling with obviously Sean Kelly, who we still have around today. But a brand that's got a lot of heritage, particularly in European Tour de France, pro racing, which you're very lucky to have, like something that we're proud of, but something that we talk about today, but try not to dine out on it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, of course. It's like, it's part, the thing is with history is you can't change history at the end of the day. But having that heritage is, you know, there's a lot of bike brands out there that just don't have that, you know.
Yeah.
Tons of bike, not to that level, not since the 60s, you know.
Yeah. And we still work with Sean. Obviously, Sean Kelly, probably one of the most famous person to ride our bikes. What is he, the best or second best after Merckx in terms of his Palmares? So we still work with Sean today. You know, we ride with him, sort of bikes. He comes to a few events with us, like, very much a friend of the brand. So another person that's good to have around the tour as well.
If you don't know who Sean Kelly is, listen to the Eurosport GCN commentary.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
he's the older Irish guy.
He is a really, really nice down to, like, he's just a legend. But a nice guy. We went to the cycle show in London. And like, I was thinking, oh, Sean's with us. Like, we'll book you a cab. Like, we'll get you there. And he's like, no, I'll just jump in the bus with you lot. And it's like, I'm sat in the bus with Sean Kelly.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's won absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Like, and then, like, he's just, good guy to have around, good guy to have associated with the brand. And yeah, allows us to sort of go back to our heritage and be proud of it, if that makes any sense.
Mm-mm-mm. And I mean, I'm a big fan of his commentary because what I like about him as a commentator is there's a few things I like. One of them is him trying to pronounce names of riders. It's brilliant. And I think that's just him as an older guy. And to be honest, I still struggle with the names, but he goes with it and he really commits to it. He might say the names three or four different ways in the space of about 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is unbelievably eagle-eyed when he's watching. He is watching the racing compared to maybe some of the other commentators. And like, if there's a crash, he's like, oh, it was blah, blah, blah. He gets it right every single time.
Yeah, he's brilliant. And he just knows like the little things that I find interesting. Like on the cobble stage, he was talking about the importance of the team cars.
Yeah.
And like the fight that's behind for them team cars, trying to get as far up and close to the race as possible. Like little things like that us non-pros wouldn't think about. Sean brings them up and you're like, oh yeah, of course. Like, obviously. And yeah, we speak to him a lot, get a few tips for tours now and again, like asking who his favorites are, but like he'll know like the moisture in the air and how that affects the road surface. Like it's incredibly impressive. He just knows everything.
It's experience, isn't it? Like, he might be in his 70s.
Yeah, and still rides like there's a lot of hours a week. And when you ride with him, you ride with him. We're on a ride. When we were at the cycle show, we done a few ride outs. And yeah, like he rides a bike. Obviously, he's Sean Kelly, but like for his age, he's just solid. Like, obviously, he's Sean, isn't he? Like, what else can you say? Like, Sean Kelly.
Yeah. And I think the mix of the commentators that Eurosport have done with you've got Robbie McEwen. He's just a very enthusiastic Australian, a legend in the sport as well. And then mixing it up with, Sean Kelly. And I like that there's pros and former pros now in the commentary with Wiggins and then Blythe as well. I probably value what they're saying more than some of the other commentators.
Yeah, they're 100%.
And I also think they're very respected by the riders in the peloton. And we're seeing that with
Riding the bike.
Yeah, we see it all the time. Like they're all like waving and chatting to him and stuff. Yeah,
it's brilliant.
Yeah. And it's cool. I mean, having that relationship and the long-term relationship with Sean Kelly really, I guess, like cements the history of the brand and the heritage of the brand. Obviously things have changed quite a lot over the years with Vitus. And we talk, one of the things obviously I have to bring it up is Wiggle.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people maybe of recent times have heard of the brand through Wiggle.
Yeah.
I'd say that's because the brand was bought by Wiggle, effectively.
100%. Like the relationship Wiggle, super simple, really. They're owned by the same group as us. So there's a big group called Cygnus Sports United. They own us, Wiggle, stuff like Pro Bike Shop, Bikester in France and Germany. So yeah, we're owned by the same group. Our relationship is they're a retailer. They help us get our hands into consumers' hands. We do the same with Bikester and Pro Bike Shop in Germany and France. The relationship we have with them is a good one, but very much one of a retailer. And they help us out strategically, buy stuff. They have strong buying powers, so we can give. Now, the one thing that drives us as a brand is giving people the best bike for their budget. That does not mean cheap bikes. If you want a cheap bike, there's other brands there. But yeah, I think having such big sort of allies to lean on allows us to give people the best bike for the budget, which is something that drives us as a brand. So Yeah, we pop into the offices sometimes. You know, we work with them in terms of stock and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, there's definitely a good relationship there. But I think we're very much Vitus Bikes, and they're very much Wiggle. But we're lucky to be owned by the same group, which is great.
Yeah, and I guess as well, it's a similar thing with DHB as well. Like, I mean, yes, DHB is Wiggle's clothing brand, but it is run as its own entity, and is, you know, it's now starting to be stocked in other places outside of Wiggle as well, and similar places, isn't it?
Yeah, we're getting stocked in a few different places now. I've mentioned Bikester, Pro Bike Shop, Chain Reaction, Wiggle. There's American stuff going on. So yes, it's a massively, massively important and exciting time for us as a brand. And hopefully, the next few years will just onwards and upwards, really.
And it's, you mentioned price point about not being a cheap brand, but also not being, you know, Vitus is never going to be a Pinarello, a Cervelo, those kind of brands. It doesn't need to be. But like, I'm looking at the website right now and I'm seeing that the Aero Road Bike, the ZX1 Evo CRX, that's a long name, that.
Yeah.
You know, ETAP, $6,000.
Yeah.
It's a great price for a bike.
And like, the big thing from us, and maybe we don't shout about her enough, and which we will do in future, is that bike is designed and developed in-house. Like, we have very, very, very intelligent and clever people in our R&D team, and the bikes are that price because genuinely, as a brand and as a group of collective riders that are lucky enough to work and run the brand, like, we just want to give people the best bike for their budget, and it is as simple as that. Like, we don't invest in any elite sponsorship deals. We don't want to sponsor a Tour de France team. We don't want to be a Pinarello or a Conlago. There's too many of them in the market. Like, we want to give people the best possible bike for their budget. It's the accessible performance angle, which in our opinion is different to value. They're not a value bike. Like, six grand is still a lot of money for a bike. If you're paying $6,000, like, why shouldn't you have ready tap? Why? Like, there's bikes in the market, aero bikes that come with non-deep dish carbon wheels. If someone's buying an aero bike and spending $6,000, they should have the best possible bike for that budget. And the bikes are winning the awards, which, you know, is the icing on the cake. It's the stuff that makes us happy. So loads of industry awards for the ZX1 and the Vitesse. So definite shift for us in road with the Evo project that has happened and currently happening. So it's birthed from there. It's birthed from who we are as a brand and the people that are sat behind the brand. Like, we're all racers, riders, like, bikes are everything that we do. And like, why shouldn't someone who's racing crits at Hillingdon or at Goodwood, why can't they have red ETAP? Why not? I think that's something that we're trying to push.
I mean, the irony is when I used to do crits, I used to race on a aluminium CAD 10 with 105.
Exactly, it's a crit race. You want a good bike that's going to make you fast, but you know, you want a bike, you don't want a 14, 15 grand bike.
Yeah, exactly. When I see that at crits, I'm just thinking, you are a very brave person.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was racing crits and stuff, I was skint. So I just was like, okay, CAD 10, it's pretty bomb proof. It's an aluminium frame.
Oh, yeah, solid.
Fantastic aluminium frame.
Yeah.
But this was like before Specialized had bought out like the LA Sprint as well. So like, there wasn't really anything else. You could get an LA, but the geometry wasn't quite as a racy, but there was nothing really else out there for like aluminium frames. Kinesis did some options, but they weren't, I don't think they were as nice. And like 105 group set at that point, the 11 speed 105 group set, three generations old now. Because we've just had the 105 DI2 come out.
Yeah.
That generation 105 group set, it was bomb proof, it's absolutely solid.
The 105 is class. It's literally like, you know, we're all lucky enough to be in cycling and work for brands and get, you know, really good deals with bikes. Like, but if I had to buy a bike, like, 105 would be a serious consideration. Like, it's a solid group set. It's not going to make you any slower and it's not going to make you any faster. Like,
yeah,
it's going to shift gears.
Especially as. The fact that it's now coming as at DI2
is shows where the market's going, like, and with the rival ETAP as well. Like, it just shows that, you know, this technology is trickling down to the I was going to say lower group sets, but that's definitely not the word. It's like trickling down to
mid tier,
the mid tier group sets that are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. I guess
and are all the performance that most people need.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I'm a big believer that Dura-Ace is overkill for most people. But I equally understand why people do want it, because it's beautiful.
It looks good and beautiful. I've never tried it.
Yeah.
It's too much. It would be too much for group set for me. Like, you know, I'm a 105 Altegra. That does everything I needed to do. Like,
yeah, exactly.
The
difference really between Altegra and I guess the new 105 now and Dura-Ace fundamentally is about weight.
Yeah. And you know, if you are Pogacar on the tour, like, that makes a difference.
Mm.
But if you're me riding around New Forest and Test Valley with your mates trying to smash each other, like, it's not really going to make a difference. Like, just empty your bead on a bit or lose some weight. Like,
go to the toilet before you go for a bike.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. But like, but then on the flip side, like, you know, if you won it, if someone wants something, they should get it. It's a bike. Like, if it's going to get them off the sofa, because you can see that, you know, Dura-Ace crank set trickling in the corner, and it's like, I'm going to go and ride my bike. Do it.
Yeah.
Like, just do it. So I think there's no wrong or right answer.
Yeah, exactly. Personally. And then what do you think is, like, we've obviously seen a real shift, I think, in the terms of bikes that are becoming available for the consumer. Like, there's definitely been, I feel, especially when I look, you know, I'm obviously very aware and have a good knowledge of the Cervelo model range of bikes. So I look at that model range and I'm like, cool, we've got the S5, the S series, R series, Caledonia, Espero, and then the time trialing and track bikes. And I look at that and I'm like, you know, the S5 is a flipping fast race bike and looks amazing. The R5 is like a climber's bike, is very, you know, it's perfect bike for someone who's going to be doing lots of hills and stuff. Then to me, I look at the Espero and I completely get that as a gravel bike. It's awesome fun, allows you to go off-road. But I look at the Caledonia and I'm like, that's probably the bike that 99% of people want.
Yeah.
Do you think it's kind of a similar thing that you're seeing as well?
Yeah, similar. Like, I think as a brand and personally speaking as well, like, the next bike that people should have is the bike that they want.
Mm.
I think that the market is, like, it's so confusing. The cycling market. I remember trying to buy a bike before I was lucky enough to get this job, and like, it was a pleasure experience, but it was a frustrating experience because there was just so much out there, and I was like, I don't know what I want. So definitely, like, my view and I can probably say Vitus's view as well, is like, the next bike that people should have is the one they want. Like, mm-hmm. if it's the color, if it's the group set, if it's the wheels, if it's because Joe Bloggs, who rides for this crazy team, rides it, like, get it. That's sort of our opinion, but it's hard not to mention gravel, obviously, and what gravel's doing to cycling in the UK. It's fantastic, but personally, if I was looking for the next road bike, I would be looking at something all road, in that area, something that you could ride gravel on with your mates, something that you could go fast on the road, you know, tire clearance can fit in, maybe road gearing, and maybe an option for other gravel specific gearing as well. But there's a lot of all road bikes coming to the market now, and that's something that I personally would feel like as my next bike. The geometry is relaxed. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are riding, like, there's some crazy bikes out at the minute, but relaxed geometry still looks aero and cool, like, you know, but definitely the all road stuff. And I know a few brands have brought stuff out recently, and yeah, we're also working on something as well. But yeah, I think people want one bike to do everything.
Yeah,
is me and my mates do, and, like, you know, we want to ride to the New Forest on the road, do a bit of gravel, jump back on the road, have a coffee, do a bit of gravel on the road. So definitely this one bike is yeah, hopefully that's something that, that comes. And I think it just showcases the cultural shift that we're seeing in the UK. Like, yeah. I don't know if it's just me and I'm making it up in my head, but like, I think gravel and the American gravel side of things is changing, like, this old traditional, like, club culture of I'm a roadie and I ride a road bike.
Yeah.
And that's all I ride. It's like so many people now are like, yeah, I ride road, I ride mountain bike, I ride gravel. And I generally think gravel is the catalyst that's pulling us into this more like diverse environment. And I think it's brilliant. Like, so many people riding so many different bikes. There's got to be a point when they all just want one bike to do it all, surely.
Yeah, like, yeah, I agree. So I was doing some tweaks and changes to my Caledonia yesterday because I'm getting it ready for, I've got Trans-Pyrenees, which is a race across the Pyrenees, ironically. And it's very hilly. So I've been like, when I do ultra races, that race is until the start of October, basically. And I spend months debating what to do in gear ratio. And I love that. Gear ratios, what brakes I want on it, like what rotors, like what tires, all that sort of stuff. Anyway, I've been procrastinating about this one for a very long time. And what I've gone, so the Caledonia has got the tire clearance for 35 tires. And I've gone down the route of going 30 tires on a gravel rim. So they blow up to probably about 30, 33. They blow up quite big. And I've put the Schwalbe G1 Speed on, because I know, for example, on the Trans-Pyrenees, there is a bit of gravel. They maybe not say it, but there definitely will be a bit. Yeah. And it's a good, like, it's a fast rolling resistance tire with a bit more grip on it for if it does get a bit rough. Mm-hmm. GRX DI2 shifters. They're amazing. They break fantastic. The actual shifter is longer, so you can put your hands underneath it and still break. So you've got everything. And they also work better for me with my mucked up hand, as I can kind of lock in better.
Yeah.
The tire, the Parkour's outer, oh, sorry, the rims of Parkour's outer ones with a dynamo hub on the front hub. And then what else have I changed on it? I've put compact chain rings, so 50-34 on the front. And then I've put a 11 to 40 cassette on it. An Ultegra DI2 long cage rear mech.
Yeah.
A wolf tooth link in it.
So okay.
The reason being that then, you know, that's a, I've literally got the ultimate of spinny gears.
Yeah, you can.
Really steep.
Yeah.
I see that what I've seen with the Caledonia, it's kind of unintentionally becoming the bike that has become my all the time bike, because so versatile.
Exactly. And I think, and it'll be different for different people. And I think that's something as an industry, we confuse consumers sometimes. Mm-hmm. Generally buy the bike that you want and that the bike that's right for you.
Yeah.
And it's simple. Bikes are so capable nowadays that, you know, they can do most things. And I think, these all road bikes that a few brands are bringing to market are generally fantastic. You could race on that bike. We're working on a Venon Evo. I can say it's not out yet. It's out in, later on in the year. But we took it to Sea Otter in the US to sort of show people the prototypes, and just been testing it for months, me and a few of the R&D guys. And like, it just does everything. Like, it's the bike that we had in the gravel last week. Like, you can ride it on gravel, can ride it on road, swap the tires out, swap the wheels out, and you've got a fast road bike. Put some bigger tires in on the gravel rims, like you said, and you've got a gravel bike. And that is, I think it'll be the bike that hopefully will be the most popular bike that we got, because it's the bike that hopefully most people would like. But then on the flip side, like, if you want an aero bike, buy an aero bike.
Yeah, exactly. They look great, aero bikes, at the end of the day. Like, I always think whenever I see an aero road bike, doesn't matter what brand it is, I always just think that looks cool.
They just look cool. And for some people, that's what they need, like having that cool bike in your house or in your shed, and you think, I want to ride that today. And that's fundamentally, that is the most important thing.
Mm.
Like, have a bike that gets you up and out and riding with your mates.
Yeah, like, I agree.
That is, yeah, that's that's the best thing, in my opinion. Like, yeah. Just right.
And then the other thing I wanted to bring up quickly as well is Prime. So
yeah, Prime.
Prime, I find Prime a really interesting brand because I didn't know about it. And then all of a sudden it just came and sort of took over all over the place.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned it to you when we were chatting last week was I spent ages trying to find a set of handlebars and for a bike build. I managed to get some Cervelo ones in the end, but I struggled to get hold of some bars, and the only bar I could find that was a carbon bar, because I'm picky as fuck with carbon bars. I have to have carbon handlebars because the vibration, the
weight. It definitely helps.
100%.
Especially for the stuff you do as well. Like you're on the bike for a long time.
And I believe that the carbon bars make a huge difference to that. A carbon stem, don't mind that so much. Aluminium stems are fine, but carbon handlebars are the things because they've got that extra flex.
Yeah.
And the Prime do a handlebar, and I think it was literally while I was searching, the only options I could find was a bar from Envy, which would have cost probably a small mortgage.
Yeah.
And I didn't really like the shape of it, or the Prime handlebar. Because of the fact of how you could route the cabling so it came out the back of the bar, which with Cervelo's integrated system means it goes straight into the stem and down.
Yeah, you wouldn't see anything. Yeah, yeah. Which again, like all of the Prime stuff, it's all designed in-house by the R&D team. It was just, we just wanted to start a performance component brand, really, doing aluminium and carbon components. The bars that you're talking about are the Primavera Aero bars.
Yes,
they are it's the best selling product at the minute. Like speaking to local mechanics just around where I live, and they're like, everyone's fitting them. The R&D team, the clever people, like the way that they feel in hand, the way that you can sit on them, they're just super comfy, super aero. And we've just brought out a gravel version actually called the Aura Gravel Aero, which are basically the road ones, but flared and a little bit more, a little bit more stiffness for gravel. But like Prime's an interesting one. Like it's in the past, it was a collection of really good products. Mm. But I think over the past year, 12 months, we've been really working on making Prime a brand, like making Prime stand for something and giving it a look and a feel that stands out. Because again, like componentry is a massively cluttered market. Everyone looks the same. Like it's all about grays and blacks and going fast. Whereas with Prime, like it's a little bit of a punky brand, a bit of an underdog, but yeah, the reviews speak for themselves. Like just Google Primavera Aero handlebars, and yeah, the reviews are class. And again, we made them because we wanted some decent priced aero handlebars in the market that we could put on our bikes. And yeah, they've done really well, and it's good to know that you've seen the brand and that it's becoming a bit more present. And hopefully, other people are as well. Because it's an exciting. Excited, like loads of cool shit happening with Prime. Like there's new wheels coming. Like it's just a cool little component brand that will hopefully grow in bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I like the branding for it. My partner's gravel bike, I bought Prime bars and stem. Yeah. Look at it, bars and stem for it.
Yeah.
I think seat post as well. Because the thing is, at the end of the day, the price point is. It's fantastic, like 150 quid for a set of carbon aero handlebars. Yeah.
And like similar to Vitas, it's like why shouldn't they be 150 quid? Like people are putting them on their bikes. Like no, it's using top tier carbon. It's made in similar factories to other people. Like it's why not?
Yeah,
and obviously the test. We're lucky we have Team Spectra UK Pro. Pro team road mountain bike and gravel, they do a lot of testing of prototypes for us and everything as well. So yeah, there's a lot to come from Prime, and it's good that we brought it up, because sometimes it sort of gets like Vitas is the big cousin again. Like even though you're talking to me, both brands are very separate. Like we have a Prime team and a Vitas team. I just help across the both, but yeah, it's again exciting times for Prime, and hopefully there'll be more and more to come. From Prime as a brand.
What do you see as the two next things? I guess what's next for Vitus and what's next for Prime?
Hopefully global retail is probably, in terms of where we are as a brand and strategically, in terms of product, on the roadside, definitely for Vitus, it's this all-road gravel. Like we, as the Vitus team, we see gravel in two different ways. We see Lycra gravel, which is your American-style, fast, tightly packed gravel. Mm-hmm. And we see non-Lycra, baggy gravel, which is your more adventure focus. So I think definitely it's hard not to mention gravel and all-road. So definitely developing them two platforms. It's obviously hard to ignore e-bikes, especially in the mountain bike area. We're a multi-discipline bike brand, so we do really well in mountain bikes. So there's definitely a lot of e-bike developments there.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Prime, I think for Prime, it's just continuing what we're doing for now. Like the products are amazing.
Yeah.
And for Prime, it's building a brand for Prime is where we're at. And again, you know, these things in road is gravel, 100%. You know, how do we develop and further Prime's gravel offering? How do we? I can't say because it's confidential. But there's a lot of integration going on in road and handlebars at the minute. Like, how do we enter the market and do something different there? But yeah, it's a brand building process, and I feel like I say the same thing as everyone else. But gravel is having that much of an impact on, it has had that much of an impact. It's probably the best way of saying it. That it's hard to ignore, and sort of development around there. Cross country is also making a bit of a, are you seeing it? It's got a feeling that cross country is like having a bit of a rejuvenation.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of it is coming from people who have been riding gravel for a couple of years and are sort of going, like I speak for myself, like, I started riding gravel in 2018, before gravel was really gravel. I rode on a cyclocross, and that's when like the first kind of like gravel ultra races started appearing.
Yeah.
And I rode a cyclocross bike that my mate made me on ultra gravel races. So it says an aggressive bike, still frame.
That's the best thing about gravel.
Yeah.
Ride and do whatever you want because nobody cares.
No one cares. And I rode this, I did the Silk Road, first edition of the Silk Road Mountain on this aggressive cyclocross steel frame. And then I was like, yeah, that was fucking brave. That's literally all I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is when, like, this is even, you know, back when Shimano didn't really do a hydraulic DI2 group set. And so they had the funky shifters and weird brake calipers and just kind of like bodged it all together and made it work. And then I think, like, for me, it's like, you know, I've been lucky to ride some cool gravel bikes. Like, I had that's a quirk. I still got that quirk, and, you know, my mate made it. And then after that, I had a prototype Windy Miller steel frame with Lauf.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was a cool bike.
Yeah, I remember seeing it.
And then I got my first Aspero, the green Aspero, which I did a lot of stupid shit on. And then I got the Aspero 5, which I've also done a lot of stupid shit on. And then I think maybe, like, especially like when I did Badlands last year, for example, and when I did Atlas Mountains in 2019, like Atlas Mountains, I was like, this is definitely I wish I was on a mountain bike.
Yeah,
that was all I thought. Badlands is fine on a gravel bike, but it would be more fun on a mountain bike.
I think that's the big thing, is that there's some gravel rides, and especially gravel like in the UK sometimes. It's like, it would be better on maybe a hardtail or cross-country bike. I'm going back to what you said. Maybe that's why we're seeing this, like, you know, renaissance in cross-country, which is good to see. It's good to see people in Lycra riding mountain bikes.
You've got
downcountry in the quite big in the US at the minute, longer track, which is basically a longer travel cross-country bike. So
maybe I've got a highball and, like...
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's literally it. It's fun. And it opens up you know, I can go down trails and stuff on that I have been down on my Aspero 5 and been like, shit, that was sketchy as fuck.
Yeah. 100%.
I go down on the high balls. The high balls are hardtail Santa Cruz. And I go down it on that. And just having that, you know, the different position, you're being a bit more upright and being with the front suspension forks, like, it just changed my viewpoint on what actually is doable on a bike. And then having, you know, recently come back from Verbia and doing proper downhill stuff.
Yeah,
I've just gone, oh, now I want a full suspension, you know.
Yeah. And maybe it is, you know, more people are doing more people nowadays are open to doing more types of riding. And maybe for someone coming from a road background, cross country is that level of like, I don't want to do enduro, I don't want to do downhill, but I want a full sus mountain bike I can rip around some trails on, and cross country is better. So yeah, there's definitely something there, but yeah, like gravel, it's exciting. I think the cycling industry in general at the minute is exciting.
I agree.
Like, keep asking ourselves, like bikes now, like across the board, all brands are like, the design and development is so good.
Yeah.
Like we've just, everyone's thinking like, what's next? Like, you've got the UCI limits on roads. So like, you know, you're sort of stalled, but it's just, it's interesting. And this all road stuff, you know, the bikes haven't got to be UCI certified. Will there be no different UCI certifications for gravel?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that, you know, we've then got this exciting opportunity of like, right, what can we do in this gravel race area? But yeah, it's just exciting. Like, you know, being part of it as a cyclist, being part of it all is like, you don't really feel like you're at work. Like we were saying the last Friday, weren't we?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
we're just working. Like, this is work. We're flying down some gravel tracks in the sun. Like, it's a fortunate position to be in for sure.
Yeah, we're incredibly lucky.
Yeah,
and I completely agree. We're in a very exciting time in the cycling industry, where, you know, gravel has always been there. It's just that it's not been maybe as defined, and the bikes that have not been necessarily quite right for it, and you know, the research and the information to develop them to be more appropriate for that kind of usage, because previously it was just like people would ride a cyclocross bike and just change the tires or something. But then old cross bikes, when they were on canty brakes and stuff, you're still limited with tire clearances. We're seeing the development of carbon and the, you know, disc brake integration into bikes, allowing people to have wider rims, wider tires, you know, more comfort, more grip. It's really completely changing the market, and gravel is probably leading that. And we're starting to see some of that. What I think is great, we're starting to see some of that then trickle into the road cycling side.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, we're seeing wider tire clearances and stuff popping up on road bikes, you know.
Yeah, and it's like, it's brilliant. Like, tire clearance is massive, isn't it? Like, everyone wants as much tire clearance as they can nowadays because they want to be versatile on their bikes, which is brilliant. Like, and yeah, I just think that we're lucky to be with this gravel thing. Excited. Like, went to America for Sea Otter, the cycle show in America. Mm. Everyone rides a gravel bike. Like, it was so good to see. Like, we're sort of catching up in a way, I think. But again, we haven't got access to such good gravel. But like, yeah, I knew just from, you know, being in the industry that gravel was big. But like, yes, yeah, it's massive. Everyone rides a gravel bike, and it's so cool. And best thing about the gravel thing is, you can do, wear Lycra in a t-shirt, wear wherever you want. Like, have whatever bike you want. People just get together and go for a ride. Like, there's a local group around here. They just go to the woods in the forest and have a barbecue on a Sunday. Like, it's brilliant. But on the flip side, you can race gravel, and I don't know. I think is gravel more accessible to the new people that we really want to get into the sport? Because you haven't got to think about traffic. You know, if you're clipping into it on a bike for the first time, like, I'd rather be on a, it probably hurt when you fall, but maybe less than the road, but you know, there's less traffic. It's just a more inclusive environment. So yeah, it's good to see welcome from everything that's happening now. and how would it affect pro racing in years to come?
We're starting to see gravel bits appear in racing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it makes you watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it makes you want to watch it. So, yeah, it's interesting. And obviously, you've got that crazy gravel racing in the US, which is like it's super super cool.
Yeah, I want to go out and I really want to do Unbound and all as many of them as like Unbound is like the one which I think everyone.
Yes, it's the one. Yeah.
But I'd like to go do the Belgian Waffle Ride, which is in October this year as well. Like, there's just so many out there, and it just to experience it more than anything. And then it's definitely, it feels like it's, as you say, probably the most kind of accessible part of cycling now, in terms of price point of bikes, variety of bikes, and the diversity of what you can do on them, especially as you've got e-gravel bikes as well now, like
things.
And I know from speaking to, you know, friends who've sort of started cycling, my advice is always like, if people are like, oh, what bike should I get? And I'm like, well, as you say, it's the bike, whatever bike you can afford and what you like, and also what you can get hold of. And I'm always like, if I was you, I would look at a gravel bike or an all-road bike.
Yeah. And exactly, you can then do everything on it, like absolutely everything. Like, yeah, it's really good. Like, we're D2C, so we're online only, so we don't get to speak to our consumer as much as we want to. So we try and utilize events and bike shows as much as possible. So good being there and talking to people and having those conversations. Like, someone's like, I want this bike, cool, you should get that bike, but what are you going to do on there? Like, there's also this bike. So yeah, all roads interest. Like, I've got mates that are diehard roadies, like the most roadie-ish mates in the world. Like, the people that will take like a cap in the back pocket to a coffee stop and put it on, and then I'm the them sort of roadies, which again is cool. Like Wednesday night this week, all turned up on gravel bikes, and it's like, brilliant. Whoa, something's changing, lads. Like, this is all changing, and yeah, like just. The difference in, like, from a marketing point of view, like the difference in content that we're seeing now on our bikes is just brilliant. There's so many people just going out on adventures, riding with their mates, and like, it's just cool to see. Like, it's just nice to see so many people just on bikes. And yeah, this, you've probably seen them. There's some people that, oh, all these new people. It's like, I know, like, it's brilliant.
Yeah,
let's get everyone into cycling. Like, let's all ride our bikes. And yeah, gravel, the pandemic is definitely a catalyst and all that. I think I might well be wrong, but in my opinion.
I agree. But I think it's been a real catalyst for it.
Development in gravel now is just going to be so interesting. Like, all these clever R&D engineers and product managers, you know, what are they going to do in gravel? Like, whenever we have calls internally about like a new bike, it's like, oh, like, I wonder what they've done. Like, in terms of what is the next thing in gravel and what are we going to do? Yeah, it's interesting.
Awesome. I'm going to wrap it up there.
Yeah.
Because I want to play with my exciting new tool.
Nice one. I've got a cross-country bike to set up as well, which I'm going to try and go out on this afternoon.
Nice. Alex, thank you so much for your time and for sort of sharing a bit about Vitus and Prime and, like, you know, with these podcasts, I think I try to show the variety of different things out there to as many people as possible. And I think, you know, showing, you know, I've been very lucky to do a series of podcasts with Cervelo, but being able to show a very different brand in a different light, and I've done ones with custom frame builders as well, like being able to show another brand adds to really that fundamentally everyone in the cycling industry, what we all want is more people to be out there enjoying cycling. And it's that simple. Yeah, it's really that simple.
Absolutely, mate. And like, massively appreciated by me as well to jump on another chat and just get the Vitus name out there, which is the aim of the game. But we'll definitely have to get another ride in soon for sure.
Yeah, I'll come your way. It's hilly here.
Yeah. Well, I think I may be in the Peaks in a couple of months to come to see a Vitus ambassador. So if I am, I'll give you a shout and we can go for a ride there as well.
Yeah, definitely. Nice one.
Cool. Well, enjoy, friends.